The Fan on Demand.
Thank you, Jerry and Joe, and enjoy that off day. We will see you on Thursday with the Blue Jays. We'll try to keep this thing going. They've won 9 out of their last 11 games. They are 4 games behind the Detroit Tigers right now for that second wild card in the American League. And right now, the Detroit Tigers are trailing the Kansas City Royals 2-0 in the top of the 8th. The Royals have the bases loaded and nobody out looking for more against Phil Koch. So if Kansas City wins this game, then the Royals would move back into sole possession of first place in the American League Central, a game ahead of the Tigers, and the Tigers would fall into a tie with Seattle for that wild card, and then we'll see what happens with Seattle and Houston tonight. It's 0-0 in that game in the top of the 2nd. Blue Jays talk till midnight is upon us. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We will get to your calls in a couple of minutes. But first, we're joined by Ben Ennis, who is, I don't know, all over the TV and the radio and stuff.
Everywhere.
You're everywhere. You're like Chicken Man. And Ben hosts the...
I don't get that reference.
That's all right. There are a couple of people out there who might have. Ben hosts the Sportsnet Magazine radio program.
It's not exactly called that, but yeah.
What's it called?
Sportsnet Magazine Live.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
It actually has a name.
All right.
Sportsnet. We don't just make it up week by week.
Sportsnet Magazine Live on Saturdays from 10 to noon on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and then he sticks around for a half hour, usually talks to me and
That's
stuff.
Right. When we can get you. You're tough to get, though, these days, Mike, yep. Especially on Saturdays. You're doing TV stuff. You're a man of multimedia as well.
I am a multi-platform... I don't know, contributor. Sure, I couldn't come up with anything.
Gentlemen, you're a gentleman.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We just talked about all the kinds of cool stuff that happened with Drew Hutchison, with Anthony Goes. One thing we did not touch on, and I was just checking this, Brandon Morrow. Brandon Morrow gave up a leadoff double to Luis Valbuena on a 99-mile-an-hour fastball and then struck out the side after that. Brandon Morrow threw 18 pitches in this game. 17 of them were fastballs. No,
right?
Pardon me. 16 of them were fastballs. 7 of them were 98 miles an hour.
That'll do.
6 of them were 99 miles an hour.
Sure.
1 was 100, and 1 was 101.
I guess. Big deal.
This is a very interesting thing now that the Blue Jays have to deal with, a $10 million option on a guy who can come out of the bullpen throwing bullets like this.
You can't, though, can you? $10 million for a guy?
Maybe you can.
I don't know, because is that... remember, he was throwing 100 in the bullpen in Seattle as well, Mike.
Yep.
Right? He couldn't find the zone.
But he's got... He's now a far more complete big leaguer.
Is he?
He's got experience. He's had a great year as a starter, and he's been hurt a whole bunch. One wonders if the way to keep him healthy is to keep him in the bullpen. Honestly, I don't know
if
it is or not.
Yeah, I don't know either, because we've seen that. I mean, Casey Jansen was a guy who the Blue Jays tried out as a starter, and he had some moments as a starter, and just they couldn't keep him healthy, so they thought that his future was in the bullpen. Turned out pretty well, although a couple hiccups, obviously, this month.
Yeah, but Dustin, overall, it's been outstanding.
Yeah, no question. Dustin McGowan, same sort of deal, right? Mm-hmm. A guy that they thought they could keep healthy by moving to the bullpen, and that has actually worked out. So it's hard to argue against the argument that, well, you know what, this is a guy who's battled injuries his entire career. The best way to counteract that is by having him throw in shorter stints out of the bullpen. I get that, but if you're going to pay a guy $10 million to come out of the bullpen, you want him to be your closer, right? Like, that's
right.
What you're talking about.
Yes, and he absolutely would be.
He would be, and I like the idea of your closer throwing 101. Who wouldn't? But I also like the idea of your closer being able to throw strikes. And, Mike, how many times have we seen Brandon Morrow, even this season, when he was actually in the rotation for whatever 5 starts, he has those moments where he has no idea where it's going.
But the difference is, and we've seen it in his 3 appearances out of the bullpen this year, you can be a different pitcher. You don't have to pace yourself.
Yeah, it's
you
true.
Can just go, straight out and just throw. You don't have to worry about your secondary or your tertiary pitches that you might struggle to throw for strikes.
What happens if you throw a fourth pitch? What's that called?
Quadriary? It's called a quandary if it's not a good one. But it's interesting, and I don't know. I mean, for me, the ideal scenario is that you go to Brandon Morrow and say, look, we're not going to pick up your option. Nobody's going to give you $10 million on the open market. Here's your million-dollar buyout. Now, how about we give you a two-year, $11 million deal with a third-year option for $9 or $10 million? And I don't know that he gets that anywhere on the open market.
It's interesting because I'm sure, I mean, Blue Jays aren't the only team that looks up there at the radar gun and sees 101. I'm sure there's, you know, 29 other teams that see that as well. The price tag is interesting and the price point is interesting. I wonder, because this Blue Jays bullpen is going to look a whole lot different next year.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do as far as what the Blue Jays rotation is going to look like. I mean, is Aaron Sanchez able to crack that rotation? If he's not, is he your sixth man, and does he start the season in AAA? Is Daniel Norris that next guy, that sixth guy in AAA? Or are you willing to sacrifice maybe stretching one of those guys out to put them in the bullpen?
What if you Chris Medlin, Aaron Sanchez? If you want to keep an eye on his innings, and he's got 126 so far, something like that this year, and let's say he gets up to 135, 140 by the time the year is over. He's actually at 126 right now. Start him in the bullpen in April and May. Move him into the rotation in June like the Braves did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
With Medlin, who wound up being one of the best pitchers in the major leagues that year.
Yeah, that's not bad. And then, you know, I guess the way you stretch him out is you just add in relief outings.
Or you send him down for 3 weeks. I mean, it's not the end of the world, right?
I suppose. It's interesting. These are really complicated questions for Alex Anthopoulos to figure out as well. I mean, you got the bullpen and having no way to project relievers year after year.
Right. Casey Jansen, we believe, will be gone.
Yep.
Dustin McGowan has a $4 million option on him. You've got Brett Cecil back.
Yeah.
You've got Aaron Loop back. You hope that you have Steve Delabar being Steve Delabar again after the down year this year because the relievers are so up and down.
That's what I mean.
You have to rebuild this whole bullpen.
That was a guy who, man, you jogged my memory with Steve Delabar. That's a guy like, how many people have just forgotten about him? He's fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah,
apparently, I'm one of those guys. But you just see it so often, Mike, year after year, guys that dominate and who look like they're going to be perennial contributors out of the bullpen. The next year, all of a sudden, they're garbage.
Yeah, happens all over the big leagues all the time.
There's very few guys that you can count on year after year. Mariano Rivera, obviously, that ilk, that are just good
there
year
are
after year.
No non-elite closers that you can count on. Year
right,
in
even
year
the elite closers like Fernando Rodney's this elite closer.
Yeah,
he was horrible.
Yeah,
for a long period of time there, he had this breakout season where it was. He was the best reliever in all of baseball, maybe one of the top 10 relieving seasons of all time.
Which Joaquin Benoit also had with Tampa.
Right. I mean, it happens. And maybe that's part of relieving as an act being a small sample size, right? Like, that's what it is.
It's 50, 60 innings.
Right. So you can have a great season and that still be a small sample size, even though it's an entire season. So... But getting back to the Brandon Morrow situation, I would love to see a guy that comes out of this bullpen throwing 101. I just don't know if I would bet $10 million on Brandon Morrow being able to be that guy and being able to throw strikes for all of next season.
This is a reasonable argument. Ben Ennis is here. It's Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight. We'll get you John Gibbons in a minute and your calls very shortly. I notice you're wearing Cubby blue.
It's like aquamarine blue, actually. It's more like dolphin blue, to be honest
really
with you.
Really? Dolphins? That's what dolphins
No, I like? Mean like the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, Miami Dolphins. All right.
Yeah.
I've referred to the Chicago Cubs a couple of times as the 2017 World Series champions.
Yeah,
but
they
the
seem
2014
right.
Chicago Cubs looked just awful.
They're not good.
This was a bad baseball team.
Yeah, I guess this is what you get when you're building a team for 2017. Jorge Soler looks all right,
yep,
at least with the bat, although he committed the error tonight in the outfield, leading directly to a run. They look okay, and this, by all accounts, is going to be a team built by Theo Epstein that's going to be different than, you know, we've seen teams kind of built this way through the minor leagues on pitching. This doesn't appear to be the deal.
No, it doesn't.
With this team, right? Like, they're going to...
They're going to go buy some pitching.
Right. They're going to go buy pitching. They're going to just kind of create these mashers from either international signings like Soler, the Cubans
and
have
Baez.
Got, Baez, who has, you know, fallen apart a little bit offensively since he came
into
the big...
Striking out in half is his bat.
That's not great.
No,
not ideal.
It's not good.
So they're going to have guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and lots of them, apparently at every single position, they are absolutely stocked in the minor leagues. But pitching-wise, I don't know. They've kind of stumbled into Jake Arrieta. I don't know how much else there is out there for them.
Kyle Hendricks tonight looked pretty good at the beginning.
Yeah.
And you know, apparently he's got the best command and best changeup of any one of their minor leaguers, and he was a National League Rookie of the Month in August. So he could be a something.
Yeah, he could be a something, but this is, I mean, it's kind of an interesting track that they're taking, because the Tampa Bay Rays don't do it this way. They draft pitching, and they draft guys that have athleticism. They draft, like, center fielders. Center fielders, shortstops, and power arms is what the Rays do, and the Cubs are saying, you know what? Nuts to that. We're going to draft guys that hit the ball out of the ballpark and you know, maybe don't even have the highest on base percentages.
Cubs have a 299 on base as
that's,
a team.
That's
yeah,
not great.
That's rough. And Chris Bryant will be here next year, third baseman, who will likely challenge for National League Rookie of the Year with Soler and maybe Javi Baez as well. This is going to be a good team, but right now they were exactly what the Blue Jays needed.
Yeah, that was the tonic for the Blue Jays. And yes, they're still on the periphery of the playoff race. Man, it would have been nice if they had taken one of those two games they lost
in Boston.
In Boston, especially the one they led twice and
three
once
times.
An extra. Well,
2-0, 6-3,
twice,
8-6.
Very late.
Yep.
And once,
but you
an
can't.
Extra
you know, you can't. If you'd be looking at an 11-game win streak, something, and that's kind of greedy. And they don't have to win out the rest of the year, but
that's
but
come close, Mike.
They have no margin for error, but they could be 3.5 games out of a playoff spot. After
all,
tonight.
I want is for that series against the Mariners, that 4-game set.
Yep.
That could be the series. I just want that thing. And by that time, the Orioles will have clinched it.
Yep.
So that will be the series. If the Blue Jays go into that 4-game set with something to play for, like, and I don't mean, oh, well, they're you know, 5 games back. No,
right.
they need to be like one or two games back, headed into that series. And knowing that the Orioles will have nothing to play for those final 3 games that will have clinched by that week, I mean, that's an ideal scenario, and I think we would see a packed house for all 4 of those games.
Oh, boy, I certainly hope so, and I'm looking forward after this sweep to a packed house, or at least very good crowds this weekend. Thank you, Ben. You were here as a spectator, and you came here and entertained us with your...
No, I didn't. Well,
no, you didn't, but you talked a little bit, so we appreciate your appearance on Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight.
I'm going to go to your house, play Donkey Kong now, okay?
You're terrible at it, so you could really use the help.
I could. Thank you, Michael.
All right. There he is. It's Ben Ennis with his lovely wife, who's wearing a pass that also says Ben Ennis on it. And again, lots of stuff on Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight. Taking your calls. We'll hear from Ben Wagner. We'll hear from Eric Hinsky, but it will be mostly you. But before we get to you, let's get to the skipper. Here's what John Gibbons had to say in the wake of tonight's 11-1 rout over the Chicago Cubs.
John, Drew seems to have picked up sort of a second win these last 4 starts. Is there anything that you're noticing over these last few outings that maybe wasn't there before that?
I mean, like you said, I mean, he's just gotten stronger. You know, I mean, he was on that little stretch where it looked like he was running out of gas, and then he just kicked it in those last 3 or 4, like you said. But, you know, it's all about locating the fastball. He's got a good fastball. You know, I think it plays better than the radar even says on it. But he was pumping some up there pretty good tonight. And he's just, you know, he's a great competitor. He's got everything you need. I mean, you know, you can really lump him and Stroman kind of in the same category. They both approach it the same way. And they got good arms. So, but yeah, I mean, that just gives him his 10th win. Great job, you know, coming back from Tommy John in his first, you know, full year back. And That's big for him. But we all our pitches were really good tonight. And of course, we opened it up. But and I thought our offense. I mean, we did a lot of good things. You know, the guys at the bottom really got it going, manufacturing runs and things like that. So it was. We were good all series.
Gibby, DeAndre Navarro has caught more games this year than he ever has at any point. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, you knew that he wanted to take on this heavy load. But how impressed are you with just how well he's done, not only at the plate, but his relationship with the pitchers and just all around what he's meant to this team?
Well, I mean, he's done a fantastic job. And, you know, we didn't know what to expect, how he was going to hold up. And he's held up pretty good. I mean, he's beat up now. Naturally, all catchers do this time of year. But, you know, it really hasn't affected his hitting one bit. That's usually where you notice it. You know, guys that, I mean, a lot of ways, that's why you don't see a lot of good hitting catchers, you know. The ones that are, I mean, it starts to take its toll as the season goes on. He's really picked it up the last few weeks. So, and, you know, as far as his, I mean, he's got a good thing going with the pitching staff. I mean, you know, but he's been around the game a long time. So he's seen all the hitters, most of the hitters. He knows what works and what doesn't work, and now he's learned his staff, and he knows what each guy can do. You know, it sometimes take a month or 2 months to even really learn that. Now he knows what to go to, and they got confidence in him, and that's when things are good.
Things are good right now in Blue Jays land. They just swept away the Chicago Cubs by a combined score of 28-3 over three games, and the Blue Jays, if the Houston Astros can do them a favor, could be 3.5 games out of the second wild card spot going into their off day tomorrow. The Yankees are winning. They just won 8-5 over the Tampa Bay Rays, so the Yankees remain a game behind the Blue Jays. The Indians were rained out, so the Jays pick up a half game on them in their rearview mirror. And the Kansas City Royals currently lead Detroit 2-0 in the bottom of the eighth inning. So the Royals have bases loaded, nobody out in the eighth, and did not score. One hopes they won't live to regret that. But then if you're a Blue Jays fan, I think one should be hoping that the Detroit Tigers come back and win, because they appear to be the more dangerous team of the two. You want to have the Royals be the team you're chasing and not the Tigers. It is Blue Jays talk, despite the fact that we haven't talked to you yet, so let's change that. Russ is in New Jersey listening on the Rogers Radio app. Russ, you're going to be the leadoff man on Blue Jays talk tonight, or the two-hitter, the three-hitter behind Bennis and Gibby. That's an important spot, the three-hitter, Russ.
Yeah, thank you. You know, first of all, you said about the 28 runs before I get to my main point, and, you know, only one home run. You know, all I've heard all year is, well, they can't score without hitting the homer. In this series, they hit the Batista homer in the first game, and that was the only homer they hit. Before I get to my main point, you know, people keep on saying, and I've heard this on many, many hosts on this program, if the Jays made it to the last series of the year, you know, the Baltimore will probably have their guys rested with nothing to play for. Just remember, you're dealing with Buck Showalter, the same guy that wears a jacket in 200-degree weather in Texas for the respect of the game. He's going to put that, knowing him, will put his guys out there.
I don't know whether he puts his guys out there, but the notion that the Baltimore Orioles are just going to roll over those final three games is silly. That's not going to happen.
Right. Let me ask like this. This is the reason I called. If I was the Jays and I would skip half Friday night, I'd go on Dickey's regular rest. I would let Gurley pitch Sunday against Tampa, who he just pitched tremendous against. Rather than open up against Baltimore, because he's opened up the series against Baltimore twice, I think the last two series, and it hasn't been good. Let him pitch Tampa, and let Hutchinson pitch Baltimore the first game, which will be a big game for the Jays, that first game against Baltimore, and he's pitched so well against Baltimore.
Russ, I'll stop you right here, because I already heard this call on Jeff Blair's show this morning on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and I have an answer for you. Here, you ready for this?
Yes.
They're not going to skip Hap on Friday. But what they very well may do, and John Gibbons mentioned this before the game today, is that they will push Burley back to Sunday's game against Tampa like you want. And he made the same point you did. Burley's pitched really well against the Rays this year, less well against Baltimore. and move Marcus Stroman to start the Monday opener against Baltimore and leave Hutchison to pitch Tuesday because it's the first September Stroman's ever pitched in. And, you know, you want to make sure that he's getting a little bit of a breather whenever he can, even though he only threw 93 pitches last night. So I would say it's highly likely that some of your theory is going to happen. I like the way you think, and it looks like the Blue Jays, to an extent, are thinking along with you.
Right. No, I put together on a piece of paper how it looked to the end of the year.
Oh, that's not going
to
happen.
And, you know, Stroman and Dickey would start the first two games against Seattle, and they've probably been your two best pitchers,
yeah,
you know, over the last, you know, two months. So, you know, I'm just thinking a little bit ahead, but, you know, if Gibby said that, you know, half would pitch on that number. I think half would pitch the last game. I don't know where half would fit in, but half pitched well against Baltimore last time also. He lost the 2-1 game in Toronto, where he gave up those two runs and the Jays couldn't put any offense together.
Right. So, like, the way it'll work out will be Stroman, Hutchison, Happ against Baltimore, and then it would be
Burley, Dickey,
Burley, Stroman, Hutchison against the Yankees.
Yeah,
and then
you
Seattle.
Can't avoid Burley pitching against the Yankees. That, I don't think there's any way to avoid that.
Yeah, I don't think there is either. And
but
the truth of the matter is he's pitched well against him a couple of times.
Right, I got to give you credit because I called when there were 31 games left, and I said, Mike, well, what's going to happen if they go 13-18? He said, Russ, it's not going to happen. And I, you know, after I left the Rogers Center when I flew into the 11-7 Red Sox game, I said, this team is in big, you know, I don't like the end of the season, how it's looking. And you know what? Give them credit. They battled. They're in it, you know. They're in it. And, you know, hopefully, like you said, Houston does us a favor tonight and we play some meaningful games at the end of the season.
Right now, Houston is leading Seattle 3-2 as they play in the bottom of the second inning. So they're doing their best to do the Blue Jays a favor. Thanks for the call, Russ, as always. Appreciate it. Let's go to Mark in Port Perry. Mark, listening on our flagship, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Go right ahead on Blue Jays Talk.
Evening, Mike.
Evening.
Thank you and your staff for putting on another great show, as usual.
Oh, thank you. The staff, the crack staff, thanks you a great deal.
They're amazing. I'm really excited, Mike, for Gibby for next year, and hopefully this year, you know, we can just take a game every week and go up the ladder. We'll see what happens, but I really love to see Gibby next year go in with a decision of, well, who am I going to use as my starters? Because all these arms are looking good. And you sort of stole my thunder when you're talking about Brendan Morrow. I've always liked Brendan Morrow. I think it was you a couple of weeks back, his freak injuries.
Yep.
And I'd really love to see this guy stay on our team and make a run for it because I just love his arm. I think he's amazing. And
I do too.
Injuries.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Brendan Morrow. And yeah, when I was talking to Ben Ennis about that, he was talking about Dustin McGowan and Casey Jansen and how moving them to the bullpen helped their careers. But Jansen had shoulder surgery. McGowan's had a couple of shoulder surgeries and Tommy John. They've had arm problems. Brendan Morrow had an oblique, a radial nerve impingement, and a torn A3 pulley in the tendon sheath of his right hand. These are things that never happen. These are freak injuries, and they're not wear and tear arm injuries.
Mike, why do you think Jansen won't be around for next year? Why are they saying that?
Nobody's saying that. It's just the feeling I get. I think that Casey's going to go out on the open market with 4 great years of relief in his back pocket. He's a Southern California kid. I'm sure he'd love. Honestly, I think all it takes is one phone call from Magic Johnson, and Casey won't be able to stop drooling before he signs a contract. I really think he's going to wind up out there. Pardon?
He is beaten up, though, a little bit, isn't he?
No, I don't think so at all. Well, he's had 3 bad outings in the last 2 months. I'm more than happy to give the ball to Casey Jansen as often as possible. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the call. Appreciate all the calls. And again, it's Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.ca. So if you're on hold, stay on hold. We're going to let the network go at the top of the hour. But then more of your calls coming up. It's the Honda Post Game Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Back here at Rogers Center, this place is cleared out. 19,411 left happy. The Blue Jays pounded the Chicago Cubs 11-1, outscoring them 28-3 over the course of this three-game sweep. Right now, the Blue Jays are four games back of the Detroit Tigers for the second wild card in the American League. The Tigers are currently losing 3-0 to the Kansas City Royals. That will change things, but not much, because Kansas City moves into first place. The Blue Jays pick up a game on the Tigers. It's Seattle then you have to worry about, because Seattle would move into a tie for that wild card with Detroit, pending the outcome of the game that they're playing right now, which is in the top of the third inning. And the Houston Astros doing the Blue Jays a favor, leading the Seattle Mariners by a score of 3-2. If that score holds, and it's not going to, but if Houston wins, then at the close of business tonight, the Blue Jays will be 3.5 games behind the second wild card in the American League, with 16 games to play, 17 games to play, and a day off tomorrow. The Tampa Bay Rays coming in for three starting on Friday night. That'll be Jay Happ against Nathan Carnes. We're on the air at 7 o'clock Eastern. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership. It may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Sportsnet Radio Network. Hang on if you're on hold for Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight. For Jerry Howard, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, and Frank Head, I'm Mike Wilner. Bye-bye.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
There goes Navarro. It's low and outside. Throw it down, and it gets away from the second baseman, Alcantara, down to third. Deonner Navarro making things happen with his legs.
Speed kills.
I'm telling you. Truer words never spoken. Deonner Navarro is now 3-for-3 stealing bases this year with the Blue Jays. Got more stolen bases than Edwin Encarnacion and Steve Tolleson. And that was in the fifth inning of what was a 1-0 game at the time. The Blue Jays wind up beating up on the Chicago Cubs by a score of 11-1. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Taking your calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. We'll hear from Bison's play-by-play voice, Ben Wagner, coming up in this hour. We'll also hear from the only Blue Jay ever to win the Rookie of the Year all by himself. But right now, we go to... no segue, because Rob Wong is not a rookie. Our intrepid reporter, Rob Wong, comes up from the Blue Jays clubhouse. Hello, Robbie.
What's up, Miguel?
What did you glean from the downstairs?
Funny enough that you played that Deonner Navarro clip off the top. Barry Davis of Sportsnet asked him about it, and he said, watch out. He's going for five. That's his goal before the end of the season. Five stolen bases. I don't know if he was telling the truth, if he was actually hoping to do that, but that was kind of funny. Dalton Pompey obviously talked to us after his RBI ground out in his first major league bat in front of his parents, and there was a lot of shots on Sportsnet TV of his dad, who had to wipe some tears away.
Yeah.
A very emotional evening, but Pompey did get the ball authenticated in a glass case. So
nice.
So he did receive it after the ball game. He mentioned that he was a little nervous stepping into the batter's box for the first time, but nice productive out for Mr. Pompey.
Had he gotten the chance to talk to his parents before he talked to you or no?
I think he might have. Barry said he saw the parents outside of the clubhouse, so
okay.
Maybe Dalton talked to them, but I'm not for sure about that.
Deonner Navarro's career high in stolen bases is five.
Oh, wow.
But he was 5-2 that year with Tampa Bay. He hasn't been caught yet this year. Was there any talk about the pregame festivities in the clubhouse?
We asked Deonner about that as well. He said he enjoyed playing with the animals, and that his kids are probably hoping that they'll have, you know, a pet tiger or something one day. But if you looked on Instagram of, you know, guys like Marcus Stroman, Jose Reyes, Jose Bautista, seemed like everybody was quite enjoying the Joe Maddon-esque clubhouse today.
Yeah, it was a team bonding exercise or something. For the people who haven't heard about it, there was a baby tiger and a lion cub brought into the clubhouse before the game.
It didn't smell like that when we went in there, so they...
When I walked out up to the broadcast booth before the game, you kind of walk through the area, and the clubhouse doors were closed, and there was a meeting going on, and I knew pitching or bullpen coach Bob Stanley came out to bring everybody in, meeting, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be something. And I walk by, and the clubhouse doors were closed, but I did hear Eye of the Tiger by Survivor playing, and I thought, well, what kind of meeting could this possibly be? Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
That's amazing.
What else?
Drew Hutchison, we talked to him, obviously. Four starts in a row now of at least six-plus innings. He's just found a second win, and he has just there's nothing in particular. He just has felt strong throughout most of the season. He's had some highs and he's had some lows coming off Tommy John, but he says it's all about fastball command, and he definitely had that tonight with the 10 strikeouts. And DeHonor had mentioned that when he works in the strike zone, he gets the Ks, and then that's exactly what happened tonight.
Did he break a smile at all? I mean, that Drew Hutchison might have the best poker face on this team.
He does. He's kind of not intimidating, I wouldn't say, but he's very serious in post-game scrums. But, I mean, you watch him on the mound, he's all business. So it's not really surprising that he would be like that after the game as well. But no smile tonight for Mr. Hutchison, but should have after a performance like that.
Yeah, and his 10th win, everything's a career high for him. And now every Blue Jay starter has 10 wins, save for Jay Happ, who starts on Friday. Rob, thank you. Go cut up the audio. We appreciate your contributions.
Will do. Thanks, Mike.
All right, there he is. Rob Wong, Blue Jays talk till midnight. And now we can go back to the phones and talk to a few of you. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance is 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays beat the Cubs 11-1 for the three-game sweep. And now four games behind the American League wild card. They are going to the bottom of the third in Seattle with the Houston Astros leading the Mariners 3-2. Bottom of the ninth in Detroit, Kansas City Royals up 3-0 on the Tigers. And we'll see if we can't do a live listen in at some point. The Tigers really aren't threatening. Two out and nobody on, and Torrey Hunter at the plate. So if they get something going, we'll take you to Detroit. If not, we'll just pass along the final. Ross is in Toronto. Ross, you're next on Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight.
Hi, Mike. Good evening. I'm not at McDonald's tonight, but I'll definitely be at the games on Friday and Sunday. So I'll be cheering them on live. I'd like to say that the Blue Jays have to do what Baltimore did to Boston, sweep Tampa Bay, because the more you sweep teams, the better you're going to get the chance to win, and it's going to be tough in Baltimore to even take two out of three the way they're playing at home.
I don't think the Blue Jays can afford really to lose a series the rest of the way, but I don't think they have to sweep Tampa. I mean, there's still not a lot of time left, but there's time left. You can't afford to lose two out of three. That'll put you in a huge hole. But if you take two out of three, I mean, a sweep's a lot to ask for. And the Blue Jays don't have to win out in September. And you know, they don't have to pull off the near impossible. They don't have to finish the season 16-1 or anything like that to make the playoffs. But you gotta at least win that series to give yourself a really good chance, and a sweep would be great.
Yeah, and two out of three against Tampa, you're right, would be good. But it's going to be the toughest series I think they have left will be the one in Baltimore. Have a good evening.
All right, thank you for the call. I think the toughest one they've got is going to be Seattle. That's the thing that's going to be everything on the line in those four games. And you hope, like we said earlier, that they go into that game two or three games out and not needing to sweep to get back within a game or something like that. It's over in Detroit. The Kansas City Royals beat the Tigers 3-0. Thus and therefore, the Royals are back in first place in the AL Central by a game over the Tigers. The Blue Jays now trail Detroit by 3.5 games for the second wild card. And they trail Seattle also by 3.5 games. So Detroit and Seattle share that second wild card right now. And if Seattle should lose, then it'll be 3.5. If Seattle should win, then the Blue Jays will go into tomorrow four games out of that playoff spot, the final one in the American League. John is in Toronto. You're next on Blue Jays Talk.
Good evening, Mr. Woolmer.
Good evening.
So I'm going to ask two questions. One
All right.
is,
why would do you think that a team that won't even spend $2 million to bring in anybody during the trade deadline, except for Danny Valencia, who's playing well, okay, won't even spend $2 million on anybody when everybody else did.
Who are you talking about spending $2 million on?
Well, the Jays could have had a lot of little guys that were $2 million here and there that would have really helped them win.
Like who?
Houston Street, Chase Headley, Adam Wright.
I don't know who Adam Wright is. Adam Wright doesn't exist.
Weber,
did you just say Ace
Weber?
Freely, the lead singer of Kiss? Is that what you just said?
Have you ever heard of him?
Who?
Jason Greeley. Do you know who he is?
Oh, Jason Greeley. Yeah, yeah. Jason Greeley. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want me to go down to continue, or is that plenty of guys that have made moves, you know?
Well, but I think you're kind of wrong on all this stuff.
Well, let's just slow down. Slow down. What? Why would you think that they're going to pick up a $10 million option on Morrall?
Because it's a completely... Well, first of all, because your thesis statement is incorrect. Can we start with that? You're suggesting it would have taken them $2 million to pick up Houston Street and you know, a few really nice prospects. Houston Street went early, and I was actually surprised by how early Houston Street moved, and it was too bad, I thought, that the Blue Jays weren't in on that. They certainly could have used him to help out.
There was plenty of guys available, Mike. He's just the one that I...
Right,
because
but you know, the
one.
People, first of all, Chase Headley I didn't want here, and I don't think the Blue Jays did. That wasn't a money-motivated thing.
There's
the only guy,
would you agree that there were a lot of guys available? Yes or no?
Of course, but we're,
okay.
Would you agree? No, John, you don't get away
I
that easy. You can't.
Okay.
No.
Saying they're not going to pick up Brandon Morrall's
Listen
option.
To me.
That's what I'm saying.
Would you say that there were a lot of guys available who could have helped the Blue Jays enough
there
to
were,
give up? Assets to pick up?
It depends on which assets. A lot of those guys went for lower end prospects. A lot of, you know, I look at the Dodgers, they picked up tons of people at the end, and I know they're not great players. And
who could have helped this team?
Roberto Hernandez could have sucked some innings. I know the rotation is playing well. That's my first point.
Yeah,
they're not going to pick up Morrall is my point.
All right. Second, your point is based on complete falsehoods, but go ahead with your second point.
Second point is, would you say that Jerry Howarth is smarter than you and I in baseball? Like, do you think he's a smart guy?
Sure.
About baseball? Okay. He happened to say, because you said that Ryan, you don't know if Ryan Goins is settling down the infield, but... Because that's what I said two nights ago. And this morning when I was listening to Jerry Howarth.
Oh, the hour of Howarth.
He said he really settles down the defense. And
okay.
He said it. You can check the tapes.
I believe that
now.
He's been saying it all,
no
all month. Ryan Goins is an excellent defensive second baseman.
Okay. And, you know, here's what I don't think he gets enough respect. I've been on the fan 100 times about him because it's not because I love him. It's because what he does with his glove is incredible. You can have a weak player like him in the lineup. I look at the Cubs lineup, and they got like 8 weak players. None of them can play defense. At least he has. You know, I look at other teams' lineups. I look at the Yankees. I look at even California has a guy, Chris Iannetta, cannot hit. But he keeps that pitching staff kind of on the straight and narrow.
Chris Iannetta walks a lot, which is swell. You can have a guy who can't hit. And I don't understand why you're arguing with me here. I believe that Ryan Goins should be playing second base for the Blue Jays. I think that his defensive contributions far outweigh what you lose having him at bat. And I think the Blue Jays agree. As you'll note, he started pretty much every game this September. With the exception of maybe one game.
I'm looking at those middle of the 80 that he didn't play, and I'm looking at a revolving door where a lot of games could have been won because of his play.
That's something that's very, very difficult to quantify, and I wish we could. And I think if we could, the Blue Jays would be a lot less reluctant to use him. But I think what they saw all year... last year, what they've seen this September, I think Ryan Goins, I mean, they're still going to try to find a guy who can hit. But for me, well, I kind of hope they do. I appreciate the call, John. I still think they're going to try to improve, but you could do a lot worse than Ryan Goins with that glove. By the way, Chris Iannetta, who can't hit, has a .374 on base percentage. Steve is in Bowmanville listening on Blue Jays Till Midnight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hey, Steve.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
I'm all right, thank you.
Oh, I love your show. I just like having Blue Jays talk after the game.
Oh, thank you. So do I.
I just like the Hutchinson won his 10th game tonight.
Well, he got his 10th win.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't win his 10th game. I don't know. He might have won his 10th game. I don't know how long ago it was, but tonight was Drew Hutchinson's 29th game, and he got his 10th win.
10th win.
Yeah.
So I just like to point out, I don't know whether it's been pointed out on your show or not, but I don't recall ever that the Blue Jays have had five starters that have won 10 games.
I don't know if they ever have, to be honest with you.
I don't think they have, Mike.
I wonder. I'll take a look back at some of the really, really good Blue Jays teams.
Well,
but I don't know.
I'd appreciate it if you would do that.
They don't yet, by the way.
Well, I know Hap's got to get his 10th, but
he's
at 9.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure he's going to get number 10 before the end of the year. But
well, you never know. Mark Burley got one win in 3 months, so
well,
don't be too sure. But it would be swell.
You never know. But that, I think that's a, you know, aside from we're still in it and we're still going to play baseball, I think that's a major accomplishment from a rotation that at the beginning of the year everybody was saying we don't have any starting pitching. So that's my comment, Mike.
All right. I appreciate it. I don't think pitcher wins are as important as you think pitcher wins are. But I do think it's not insignificant to have five guys in double digits in wins. I think that shows durability. It shows the ability to go deep in games. It shows good things about your starting pitching. And I'm gonna take a look here as we talk to the next caller. Blue Jays beat the Cubs 11-1. It's Blue Jays talk till midnight. Peter in St. Catharines, welcome aboard, Peter.
Oh, Mike, or should I call you Venus Flytrap?
No, I don't think you should.
No, well,
no.
You're the late-night guy now, so...
That's probably not a good idea.
Okay. Okay, just want to say, I have a question. Do we? If anyone knows this, you would. Is John Mayberry the first of the junior and senior, the first father-son
yep.
to play for the...
Yes, Blue John Jays? Mayberry is the first Blue Jay whose father also played for the Blue Jays. Which is super cool.
Mm-hmm. Terrific stuff. And also, yeah, and also I just want to mention, in honor, the Blue Jays had a blowout game today because we go back to, for the older Blue Jay fans, today is the anniversary of their greatest day in Yankee Stadium when they beat 119-3.
Yeah, the Roy Howell game where he drove in 9 runs. It was in like 78 against Ron Guidry, I think.
77,
and Guidry was 25-3 that year.
That's right.
And won the Cy Young Award, but the expansion Blue Jays beat the crap out of him.
Yes, and I hope Roy Howell heard that. He's listening out, and he's the manager in Tacoma, their Seattle AAA team.
I guarantee you that Roy Howell is not listening to this program.
Maybe. We don't know.
Yeah, no, that's true. I'm pretty comfortable with that guarantee.
All right, let's keep this thing going on Friday.
That'd be swell. Thank you, Peter. Appreciate the call. Looking back, the Blue Jays had... 5 double-digit winners in 1991, but one of them was a reliever. Juan Guzman, Jimmy Key, Todd Stottlemyre, and David Wells all won double digits out of the rotation, and Mike Timlin had 11 wins out of the bullpen. So that's the last time the Blue Jays have had 5 double-digit winners. In 1987, they had 6. Mark Eichhorn out of the bullpen, we should have been the American League Rookie of the Year. It was a travesty. And Jeff Musselman out of the bullpen as well. Then Dave Steeb, Jim Clancy, Jimmy Key, and the late John Cerruti out of the rotation, though Cerruti was a swingman then. So I still haven't found 5 starters with the Blue Jays who had double-digit wins. And I'm confident now, as I'm back in 1982, saying that if Jay Happ can pick up a 10th win in one of his remaining starts, this will be the first Blue Jays team ever to have five starting pitchers in double digits in wins. Going to get to Ben Wagner soon, but first, Matt in Vancouver, listening on the Rogers Radio app. Welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Thanks, Mike. First, before I get to my question, I just wanted to point out that was an awesome play that on the throw that Bautista made to Valencia to end up taking away that potential triple right there just to start the game up. So
Bautista actually made the throw to Goins, who threw to Navarro, who threw to Valencia. Yeah, that was a very, very nice play.
That's right.
Huge in the first inning.
Yeah, really big. Bautista, he can get you runs and he can also take them away in the field, so that's why he's my favorite player.
There you go.
I had a question actually about Hutch. There was a long layoff in the between the innings where he was rolling along, and then the Blue Jays scored three runs, and they were talking on the television broadcast that maybe sitting on the bench in the dugout for 20 minutes might have affected his sharpness, and I don't know if I agree with that or not. It's just one of those things. Sometimes you go out for the seventh inning, and that's usually around the time when a starter tends to maybe lose a bit of his stuff. So I just thought I'd ask you and see what you think.
Well, the pitch count was still pretty low. He was only at 79 pitches going into the seventh, so it was unusual that way. I think it's possible, but I think a pitcher will always tell you that he'd much rather sit in the dugout for half an hour while his team scores 3-4 runs and then go out and work than go into the seventh in a 1-0 game.
Do you think that it could ever just potentially affect?
Yeah, sure it could, but I don't know that it can destroy a guy, but if it does, at least he got some runs to work with.
That was an excellent game tonight. I hope that they can stay in it and till the end, even if they don't make it. I just want to see them stay in this as long as possible because I'm not used to this. I've been watching this game for quite a few years now, and this is new for me. So go Jays, go, and thanks for taking my call.
All right, thanks for calling. I'm not used to it either. It's been 20 years since we've seen something like this. The Blue Jays are in the race. They right now are 3.5 games out of the wild card spot in the American League. It is 3-2 Houston over Seattle as they go to the fifth inning. Steve is on the 403. Hey, Steve.
How you doing, Mike?
All right, go ahead.
How you doing, Mike? Good show so far. I think I might be the first Cubs fan to actually call in. I'm not 100% sure about that.
Well, I'm sorry you had to watch that.
Well, unfortunately, I was at all three games. Like I said, I'm a longtime Cubs fan from London. So I just wanted to touch base on just a couple of things that were pointed out about the Cubs roster and whatnot. This is kind of sort of typical Theo Epstein, the way he did it back in 2004 with the Boston Red Sox, the way he built around, and then he went out and got his pitching. Now, again, from watching the Cubs throughout the year, that's constantly what him and Jed Hoyer have always said, that they were always going to build, and then go out and get that pitching when they realize that they need it.
That's what we're assuming, sure.
Yeah, no, and yeah, taking lumps like we should, that's what it is. I think it was Monday I was listening on the way home about a caller said that's what the Houston Astros did, but that's that they completely had to overhaul,
right?
And it's a long haul. Now one thing I was going to touch base with on the pitching is, again, coming into this series, Rick Renteria had mentioned that he's going to basically, because I heard a lot of people as I was coming out of the stadium saying, they always blow up in the later innings. Their pitching staff is only ever, their relief pitching has only ever seen triple A pitching or triple A hitting too. And that showed in the seventh inning last night with Bautista and just clutch hitting.
Yep.
And a lot of people, I hear a lot of people, and it's typical Toronto stuff, giving me the rigmarole, but it was a beat down of epic proportions against kids, but they are major leaguers. And as I said to everybody, I wish the Blue Jays luck. For Canada and whatnot, I hope that they make it on, but I just can't see everybody holding on to the hope, but, you know, there always is hope. Maple Leaf hope.
No, this is a little bit more different than Maple Leaf hope, I think, Steve, unless you're talking about Canada as opposed to the hockey team. But I appreciate you calling to defend your Chicago Cubs, who looked absolutely horrible here in three games this week. Thank you for the call. Thanks for all the calls. We are going to hear from Eric Hinsky a little bit later on in Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight, but right now we're joined by Bison's play-by-play voice, Ben Wagner, from whom we're going to get 6 minutes of gold right here. Thanks for hanging around. You know, you were here in the third inning, and now you're still here, so welcome aboard.
Well, I had to get a good leaf blower segment in.
Yeah, that's right.
Two staples for me and Blue Jays Talk, the leaf blowers and then the grounds crew stamping around home plate and the mound.
Yeah, we didn't get
I love
that tonight.
It. No, why?
People always talk about some people
somebody was
beating
bolting.
Laundry against rocks. What are they doing? And I have to explain that it's the grounds crew. But yeah, these are the staples of the program.
Pretty much my life is complete now.
So you got to see a lot of your guys over the course of this evening when it got into garbage time and even before. But more importantly for me anyway, Kevin Pillar. I want to talk about him for a second because it's funny. When he's not here, the callers talk about him like he's going to be the savior and why isn't he here? And then when he is here, it's like, well, what makes you think this guy's going to be able to play in the big leagues? He doubled in the third inning in his first at-bat. That made him 9 for his last 18 at that point. You have seen this guy hit and hit and hit and hit, and not just this year. Tell us your impressions of the Kevin Pillar that you know in Buffalo.
Gets to the ballpark early, leaves with a dirty jersey. That's the kind of gamer that he is. He goes out, he grinds at bats, and when he gets locked in, he becomes an absolute machine at the plate. And he's driving the ball, and he admittedly told everybody after last season he got a little bit of pull happy and tried to drive balls out of the ballpark, and that's not the kind of player that he is. So he decided to be a gap-to-gap guy, try to find doubles, and if he runs into a big home run, he'll take it. But he's happy with the extra base hits. He was on an absolute tear. Probably would have set a Bison's record for extra base hits in totals and doubles if he would have stayed the last 3 weeks of the regular season. Plus, remember, he had already been recalled twice earlier in the year. So he was on a torrid pace. The kind of player that he ultimately is, he goes out, he's a great teammate. Guys in the clubhouse love him. He loves being in the clubhouse. He loves being one of those guys. Understands the culture that needs to be fostered. And he just goes out and he plays hard day in and day out. And he wants to be in the lineup every day. And he wants to analyze the game and break it down. He wants to make mid-game adjustments and he wants to talk about hitting. That's the kind of guy that I see night in and night out. And we also see him play in Buffalo all three different positions. So he's going to play corner to corner. And you've seen the spectacular defensive and diving grabs that he's made in center field. And I've had a number of coaches last year with Marty Brown, this year with Gary Allenson as a manager, say that he gets the best jumps of any outfielder at any of the three positions put together. That's the kind of guy that you want. You want him to throw to the right bases. You want him to make the strong and accurate throws. Does he have an all-world arm? No, but he can make sure that the throws are on target and accurate and throw to right bases, which is some of the little parts of the game that will result in big plays perhaps or big innings if you don't do that properly. That's the kind of player that we saw on display night in and night out in Buffalo.
Now, you said grind out at bats. That has been the biggest problem for him here in the major leagues. Whether it was the end of last year where if you had two strikes on him, all you had to do was throw a slider down on the way, he's going to get himself out. What stands out the most to me about Kevin Pillar is 87 at bats, no walks.
Right, which is a surprise. And you saw him diving at sliders a little bit earlier tonight, too. And I think that's part of the maturation process where he needs to take that extra step. And that's why I think September this year is even better than September last year for him, because he's getting his mental game together as well as the physical part of it. That, I mean, Anthony Gost walked tonight. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin Pillar's got an ability to do that as well. So while he's trying to jump on mistakes and he's trying to hit pitches in the strike zone and go up there with a plan, there's obviously a little bit more that he can go out there and do and expand his game on. And that's improving that on-base percentage is going to be a great step for him.
Yeah, one hopes he can do it. I can see him as, you know, if that ever comes around, a guy who's got the ability to be like a two-hitter in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got the speed to do it.
Right.
And he's got the contact ability to do it. He's tailor-made for the position in the order. And now he just needs to prove that he can do it consistently and get himself from the lower part of the order to the upper part of the order.
Ben Wagner here, play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons. I've heard on a few occasions people ask you about all these young pitchers that you've seen, and you didn't see a lot of Kendall Graveman, you didn't see a lot of Daniel Norris. But look at what Norris did in Buffalo, with Buffalo. It is no small wonder that you rave about him every chance you get.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, what's not to rave about? A guy that makes a big splash like that and doesn't ever look overmatched by jumping up that level. He did at times look beatable in Double-A. He got beaten in Triple-A as well, and he had a bad game. I mean, that's the bottom line. Life on the fastball wasn't there, couldn't spot pitches, didn't execute pitches, and he got beat around a little bit. But the first three starts that he had at Triple-A, and you look at just the eye test with Daniel Norris when he's out there on the mound, that tells you just about everything you need to know. Can the guy play? Can the guy pitch? Does he have a plan? And does the game ever speed up on him? The answer is no. I never saw that whatsoever. So that's part of the reason, you know, in the afterglow of Daniel Norris in his brief time in Buffalo, moving then from the starting rotation also to the bullpen, was something that he embraced, one, because he knew it was going to be his next opportunity to get here.
Right.
And that's the ultimate goal. So if you're going to fight that, you probably need to take a back seat to the next opportunity. So all that coming together, I mean, the stuff is just electric. And you don't see that arrive every time. And, you know, Marcus Stroman has changed over the course of this season in being a dominant pitcher. You saw in that unbelievable outing last night, too.
Yeah.
Monday night.
Yeah.
So, but there was just a difference in aggressiveness for a young pitcher than what we even saw from Marcus Stroman this year. And what we saw from Aaron Sanchez as he was trying to figure things out. Through three different levels for Daniel Norris. I mean, he was figuring stuff out along the way. And we were told by Blue Jays people as he comes here, like, this guy's ready to go. He's ready to go now. And you saw it in limited sample size in 5 2/3 in his debut. Then he 13 strikeouts with the curveball that was one of the focal points going into that start when I talked to Mike Nickias. And he worked with a lot of veteran catchers, too.
Yep.
And don't underscore that, because that is an importance of a calming factor for Daniel Norris when he's behind in a count or trusting a pitch where he needs to spot it. And maybe when he's thinking fastball, they go to the off-speed stuff, or if the curveball's not being recognized as well, and a catcher that can read swings behind the plate is somebody that's not just focused on being involved in the game calling. Like a young guy like A.J. Jimenez is so young and still green in terms of calling a game and reading things within those games and the second time through the order and making sure you make adjustments.
Ben Wagner, play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons. I wish we could have a lot more time. We want to get to the Eric Hinsky things. Thank you. The tour of Ben Wagner continues. You're on Baseball Central at noon tomorrow for the whole hour with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Then you're doing Pitch Talks tomorrow night.
Yes.
Which is very cool. Go to @PitchTalks on Twitter to check that out. I did one in April. Thank you so much for this. It's always great to catch up with you.
It's awesome to be here. Thanks, Mike.
That's Ben Wagner, play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons. Eric Hinsky is next, Cubs first base coach, as we continue with Blue Jays Talk till midnight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Join Blue Jays Talk with Mike Wilner after the game, and together discover there is such a thing as a stupid question. Many, many of them. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The Chicago Cubs 11-1, a three-game sweep over which they outscored the Cubbies 28-3. Before the game, I sat down with former Blue Jay and now Cubs first base coach Eric Hinsky, and I asked him how cool it was that he got a big league coaching job the same year he retired.
You know, I'm proud of it, getting a coaching job in the big leagues right away, because it showed that I did things the right way when I played. So I never burned a bridge, always was happy, always a good clubhouse guy, and just tried to do whatever I could that day to help the team win. And when Theo Epstein called me in the offseason and asked me if I was interested, I jumped at the opportunity for sure, did the interview, and got it about 4 days later. So I'm so excited about it.
Was that something you thought about doing when your playing career was done, or did you think you might, you know, take a couple of years?
I heard that you shouldn't take a couple of years, because if you get your name out of the game, it's harder to get back in. So once I knew I was done playing, my main focus was trying to get back in. And I actually, the Yankees called me, offered me a scouting job, be one of their Major League Advanced Scouts. And I took a 2-year deal with them, and not 3 weeks later, Theo Epstein called and asked if I was interested. And I said, well, I just signed a contract with the Yankees. And he said, I'll just call Brian Cashman, ask for permission to interview you. He gave him permission, I did the interview, and the rest is history.
That's amazing. So we would have seen you like 3 times a year around here if you're a Yankees guy.
Yeah, you would have, yeah.
That would have been cool, but we're obviously much happier for you doing this. You did it, and like you said, you did it the right way. You know, you came here in that trade from the A's, first big move by J.P. Ricciardi, you win the Rookie of the Year. Things kind of went south. Nobody remembers that you broke your hand in the last week of spring training, your second year. But how much did trying to play through that set you back?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, I had to make some mechanical adjustments because of it. And, you know, I played the first 6 weeks of the season with a broken hand. And, you know, when you're hitting 220 with two homers in the middle of May, it's not a good feeling. And it was a battle that year for me. But I always looked to 04 as I was healthy, and I felt like I should have had a better year that year. You know, I played 155 games, and I still only hit 15 home runs when I should have probably hit 25 and have more RBIs. But, you know, I was learning. I was a young player still. I basically was hitting off the fastball and trying to hit off speed in the zone and really didn't have an approach on how to sit on an off speed pitch or sit soft in certain counts. And as I got older, I learned that stuff. And when I left Toronto, I really became much more of a big leaguer and a smarter veteran player for sure.
Which is not the path that most people usually take. I mean, when you have a Rookie of the Year who, for whatever circumstance, flames out in a second year and then the next year comes back healthy, still has a down year, those guys don't usually wind up playing 12 years in the big leagues.
Yeah, I just I worked hard every day. I knew that if I wasn't going to be in the lineup, at least I was going to work as if I was going to play that day. And that helped me along my career for sure, because as I became a part-time player, I still was doing damage when I was in there. You know, I treated it as, well, I'm going to get an at-bat today, or I'm going to at least prepare like I'm getting an at-bat today. So I always put that on my shoulders to be ready to go when they called my number. And all I could do was control when my name was in that lineup on the card. So as long as you do that, worry about yourself in that way and prepare the right way and know how to work, I think things work out for you. And that was my motto.
We're with Eric Hinsky, Cubs first base coach now, and still the only Blue Jay ever to win Rookie of the Year all by himself. Alfredo Griffin shared it in 1979. You had a knack for finding your way to the right situation. 3 World Series in a row, or was it 3 World Series in 4 years? I mean, you played on some very, very good teams towards the end of your career.
I did. Well, I got traded to Boston in 06, and then it was the last year of my contract that they picked up in 07. We had a great year, won all year, won the World Series. Signed in Tampa in 08. Didn't know we were going to be the Cinderella story, end up going to the World Series, but losing, and then signed with Pittsburgh in 09, get traded to the Yankees, who are the best team in baseball. And, you know, you're right. I was a good part-time player that filled a need on a good team. So I realized that if I was on a good team, I could help them win, because I never complained about playing time, and I was a manager's dream. I played all 4 corners, never complained about playing time. When I got in the lineup, I did damage. So it was a great, you know, 07 to 2013 for me were really good years of my career, and I really understood myself as a player. I was a veteran. I knew what I was trying to do when I stepped in the box, and, you know, I wasn't the greatest player around, but I had a knack for doing things at the right times.
Guys who do what you can do, like you said, are good fits as the 23rd to 25th guy on a roster of a team that's trying to do some damage.
No doubt, for sure. And, of course, I mean, I was the Rookie of the Year here. I would have loved to have been a 10-time All-Star after that. Well, that wasn't the route for me. I guess I wasn't that good of a player to do that. But I found a niche. I found out what I was good at, and I accepted my role. And exactly right. The 23rd to 25th man on the roster is very important on a winning team. Bench players are huge on winning teams. You got to give the guys days off. You need guys to come in and step in big situations, especially in the National League as well, pinch hitting. So once I found out about that, and man, I could get paid for a while doing this, I think I'll do this. Yeah,
that's a good strategy. We're with Eric Hinsky. The Blue Jays seem to have a guy like that who they really haven't used much this year, but Dan Johnson reminds me a lot of you. He can't play third or the corner outfield spots, so he's not as defensively versatile, but he's that left-handed bat off the bench who can hit the ball at the ballpark, who will take a walk, the things that you need to do to keep rallies going and win ballgames.
You're right, he is. And he's hit some big home runs in his career in late situations, in playoff and in playoff atmosphere games. Yeah, no doubt. He will continue to get a job because of that. You know, they pay you for that, and it's a special thing to be able to do it and to accept the role, because, you know, a lot of everyday players don't want to become bench players or don't know how to pinch hit. They just don't know how to prepare. Because it's a learned trait. You have to accept it. and want to be good at it, you know, and some guys just don't want to be good at it. It's kind of a tough gig. You're set up to fail. You're facing a closer most of the time, or you know, the eighth inning guy that they have out pitches. They're in the back end for a reason. So it's fun. It was a great time, man. I had a blast, you know. It's playing baseball is fun. I'm a baseball lifer. I'll always be in it.
And now you're with this group who a lot of people are calling the 2017 World Series champions. You know, you're trying to really build something here, and I'm assuming you're a big part of that.
Yes, I would love to be, no doubt. You know, Theo Epstein's done a great job of understanding we had to get younger when he took over and build from within, and that's what he's done from day one. And now all these kids are starting to show up, and there's more coming next year. And it's a cool situation. You know, we had a couple injuries right now with our 3-4 hole hitter with Castro and Rizzo out. So, you know, that hurts us for sure because our two middle-of-the-order veteran guys aren't in there right now. So these kids are learning on the fly for sure. It's good for them, though. You know, get a month, 6 weeks in before opening day next year so they're not shaking opening day next year because, you know, my first game in the big leagues was opening day, and I remember my back leg shaking in the batter's box for sure. So it's fun to be a part of. It's fun to help younger players as a coach. Like when you tell them to do something or if you give them a certain idea of an approach at the plate and the dude hits a double at that time up and he looks at you and points at you, it makes you feel good. It's my way to compete now.
It's funny. You remember your back leg shaking. Your first game in the big leagues was also my first game in a big league broadcast booth. And I remember you hitting a bullet off of Pedro to dead center for a base hit.
Yeah, I did. You're right. I think I got two hits that day. I had three RBIs. That was the start of that rookie year for me and your rookie year. So I haven't seen you in a while. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you, too. I'm on 13 years in the big leagues. You and I will be doing exactly the same thing our whole careers. I got to ask you just about your memories from here. You were here for a while in a very weird time for the Blue Jays. I mean, one of the best teams that they had in I want to say, 03, and then a terrible team where, you know, it got to the point where Chris Woodward was the number three hitter for a while because everybody was hurt the next year. What do you remember? Not necessarily on the field, but off the field, the people, the city, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I remember my teammates. You know, I remember playing third base behind Roy Halladay. I remember hitting fifth behind Carlos Delgado when he hit four home runs. I remember certain things like that, certain things in the clubhouse. I remember a walk-off homer against the Red Sox. You know, just certain times that were good. It kind of seemed like we were always in third place behind the Yankees and Red Sox. My years here, my 5 years. I believe we took second place once. But I was a kid that broke into the big leagues and loved the city for it. I mean, I have so many memories of the spots I'd go to dinner with my wife. You know, when we were in Yorkville, we had a place up in Yorkville on Bay and Bloor, and just going back there and just remembering. It was before we had kids, just remembering where we'd eat and certain things like that. I mean, it's such a special town, and it is a great city. It truly is. I think it's the best visiting city as a visitor in the big leagues. It's awesome.
Great to hear. And you know what? In Wrigley, if you guys do wind up doing something and in a couple of years and you're a part of that, you will never have to buy a drink ever again.
When it happens, you'll never have to pay for a meal in Chicago again. That is for sure.
Well, good luck to you. Hopefully we're there with you when you do it. Or, you know, maybe the Blue Jays beat you and you win the next year or something. But this is great. It's great catching up. It's great to see you. And I'm glad to see you're still in the big leagues. And best of success to you.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
That's Eric Hinsky, one of the great guys in the game. Always has been. Somehow got a bad rap in Toronto. Undeserved. He's a terrific guy and has carved out a great major league career for himself. Now the first base coach of the Chicago Cubs, who the Blue Jays just swept out of town by a combined score of 28-3. The Blue Jays winning 11-1 tonight. Day off tomorrow. And then Friday back at it. The Tampa Bay Rays in town for the first of three. It'll be Jay Happ against Nathan Kearns. Right now, the Blue Jays are 3.5 games out of the second wild card in the American League. They need Houston to win to keep it at 3.5, and Houston is up on Seattle 4-2 right now in the bottom of the fifth. Thanks to Tom Young, to Derek Brandeo, to Frank Head, to Ben Ennis, to Ben Wagner, to Rob Wong, to all of you for listening. We'll see you on Friday night.